I'm Karen Given, and it's time for Three Stories You Should Know. Team USA is in France, looking to repeat as Women's World Cup champions, with maybe a little bit of help from a very young phenom, and that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by Bleacher Report's Miren Fader and Professor Kenneth Shropshire, CEO of Arizona State University's Global Sport Institute. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks for having me, Karen.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Miren, tell us about this young phenom.
So I profiled Mallory Pugh for Bleacher Report's BR Mag, and sure, it's a story about a 21-year-old phenom, somebody with incredible speed, incredible playmaking ability, but, you know, what it's really about is how hard it is to be a prodigy, how much pressure and expectations there are on young people. And it's only getting worse. I mean, I think the emphasis on young and young and young has really hit women's soccer. Recently, Olivia Moultrie, a 13-year-old, turned pro. And Mallory Pugh entered the national stage at 14. So what you have here is this dynamic where the expectations are only getting bigger. And what I realized in talking with Mallory is that it really affects her psyche. She's in a battle with herself, constantly questioning, you know, am I good enough to be here? Most of us are not our most confident selves at 21, and Mallory's story and Olivia's story really cause us to question, you know, what's the effect of putting so much emphasis and weight on our younger players, and how does it really affect their mental health?
One of the things we're studying a lot is this whole idea of transitions, and at the heart of the problem we've determined is starting that transition concept as early as possible, getting every athlete to be clear, it's not going to last forever. What are you going to do next? And part of the problem with getting athletes to do that is the culture that says, if you think about anything else, you're not thinking about whatever it is you're playing. So it's thrilling to see these young people be successful, but it's also kind of on the tightrope kind of feeling of, well, what's going to happen when the end of the career comes?
My first reaction to all of this is to really feel terrible about the pressures we put on these very, very young athletes, especially for me when it comes to the choice of whether to play in college or turn pro, because for 99.9% of college-aged women's soccer players, the absolute right answer is to go to college. And for those very, very few, very, very elite players, college isn't the right choice, but that feels like a very lonely decision to make. I mean, when I was reading your piece, Miren, that is the main sense that I felt, was not so much the pressure, but the real loneliness that Mallory felt as she was sort of pulled away from her support systems and pushed out on her own, really kind of maybe before she was entirely ready for that. But on the other hand, whenever female athletes are subjected to the same pressures that male athletes have been subjected to for decades, I kind of do a little happy dance. Is it just me?
It's hard, right? You want to celebrate the fact that they have this opportunity to go pro and get the things that, you know, come with being a pro. But the money is so not the same for women that it is for men. So the incentive is different. And I think talking with Mallory, like, she used the word lost, and I think that's really hard because a lot of these young prodigies are supposed to feel anything but lost. They're put on this one track for all of their lives, and for her, she had to figure out her way, and we don't really talk about the growing pains that come with it.
Ken, you're up.
My story is about Kevin Warren, the new commissioner of the Big Ten. He's the first African-American commissioner of the Big Ten, first African-American commissioner of a Power Five college conference. It really is a moment to celebrate, and I kind of have this awkward thing about celebrating African-American gender, all these firsts just still make me kind of uneasy. So maybe it's a moment to acknowledge. As Kevin gets this job, and he's a wonderful guy, I've known him for years, he leaves a job as a COO of the Minnesota Vikings, and he was the highest-ranking African-American with a team in the National Football League. And this is a league... Somebody said this the other day, which I thought was a great way to phrase it. It's easier to find a former black president of the United States than it is of an NFL football team. So it's a very interesting moment to see what the NFL does. To me, it should be pretty revealing that once again we have this presence of people of color on the field of play, but the closer you get to the real money, the less likely you are to see a person of color. And losing Kevin has one great job, moves to another. It's going to be interesting to see if someone else comes in and if the league has more of a wake-up call than it's had about the absence of African Americans in this president position.
Yeah, I agree. I hope they use this as an opportunity to, you know, make sure a person of color fills that role. And I think also it was really cool to see that in the articles about him and this job, he said, you know, I want to make sure that I open up doors for other people, and knowing that it's not just this position, but, you know, hopefully inspires others to follow suit as well.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, Ken, in a league where maybe 70% of the players are African-American, the NFL now has zero top executives with teams who are Black, just one Black GM and three Black head coaches. And that's pretty pitiful. But I wanted to ask you about something else, which is we all know that the NFL has a terrible track record when it comes to diversity, but so does the NCAA, you know? And Kevin Warren will now be in a position, it feels like, to make some real changes in a space that needs some real changes.
Absolutely. There's such a long way to go. But the key to this, and the key with race issues, gender issues, sexual preference issues, is that there is this diversity in the room where decisions are being made. And to be in the room where these Power Five commissioners are making these determinations about pay for athletes, about where funding should go, about the new media rights deals, to have Kevin in there and to know, and he is that guy that will be no nonsense about any race issues going askew in the conversation. So that's wonderful. And again, too, if we give everybody the benefit of the doubt, we should give them. There are many people that have not had close relationships with people that are different from them. Mm-hmm. And for these crusty old guys, and a few exceptions, to have moments with Kevin will be a good thing. To say, oh, if somebody can do the job, they can do the job. Let's look for the best candidate in a way that we have not before.
All right. Until this week, I had never heard of Charles Glenn, but that was before I read a profile in the New York Times and then immediately went to YouTube to hear him sing.
In the rocket red glare, the bombs bursting in a
Charles Glenn has been the anthemist for the St. Louis Blues for 19 years, and he will belt out that song just one more time on Sunday night before Game 6 of the NHL Finals. Unlike other professional sports teams, a lot of NHL teams feature the same singer over and over again. In Boston for many years, it was this guy named Rene Rancourt, and if it wasn't for his real deep connection with Bruins fans, I would never have experienced what was, for me, the best national anthem of my life, which was just days after the Boston Marathon bombing, and Rancourt came out onto the ice, sang the first three words, and then conducted the fans to sing the anthem themselves. It was absolutely beautiful. And so I'm wondering, does the NHL get this right, or would you rather see minor celebrities and youth choirs serving up the national anthem?
You know, you got me. I've been trying, since you first brought this to my attention, I've been trying to figure out my preference on this. And the rendition is wonderful. This guy is going to be sorely missed. As a business person, the cost efficiency of having the same person, and you don't have the person where you have to have the coach that'll come out and help them remember the words or whatever, those incidents that we see over and over again. So I say I'm you know, it's the Mona Lisa to me. Sometimes it looks good, sometimes it doesn't. I think it's okay.
Mirren, do you come down more strongly on one side or the other?
I actually really like this concept of it being one guy. I mean, this guy had a hell of a run. It's incredible. It's almost like athletes, you know, we go to the games, we look forward to seeing them, we feel this connection to them, even though we actually have no connection to them. But I like that you feel like you can. I feel like bringing the same person makes me feel that special feeling.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Bleacher Report's Mirren Fader and Kenneth Shropshire, CEO of Arizona State's Global Sport Institute. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Karen. Mr. Decision Maker here.
As you're getting ready to support the women in this World Cup, remember, you can also support Only a Game by subscribing to our podcast at Apple, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. After you hit subscribe, feel free to celebrate by shouting, "Goal!" Or leave us a review. That's probably less weird.